Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour number three of our radio program. That's right. Zach Gelb shows CBS Sports Radio. The Sixers, after one quarter in a series that's tied up at two games apiece, they are in Boston for game five. As the second quarter is about to start, the Sixers have a 33-26 lead. Jason Tatum, paging Jason Tatum, you're going to show up? He was 0-for-5. In the first 12 minutes, with only 2 points, got to the charity stripe and hit two free throws. Al Horford's done nothing with the big fat zero. And Jaylen Brown leads the Celtics right now with 9 points. For the Sixers, Embiid and Maxey lead the way with 11. Harden has 5, 2-of-2 from the field. And Tobias Harris has 6. P.J. Tucker, who Hickey's very high on, and he believes he could potentially be a dangerous, underrated third weapon threat for the Sixers. Played 10 minutes, no points, and had a rebound in the first 10 minutes that he's played in this contest. So we'll keep you up to date on that one. Sixers 33, Celtics 26. You do have the Suns and Nuggets coming your way in 2 hours from now, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. And in the world of pucks, big night for the Devils. They scored first. I think it was Timo Meier, or maybe it was Jack Hughes, who scored very early, right when the game started, and then the Hurricanes did answer back. So that's 1-1 heading into the second period. The Hurricanes won their first two at home, then dropped game three in New Jersey as the Devils basically put up a baseball score. I think it was like 8-4 or something like that. And now we'll see if the Devils can even up this series at 2 apiece. And the Stars and Kraken in Seattle. Seattle up 2-1 in this series. That comes your way at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll see if the Stars could bounce back after that Game 3 performance. So we'll keep you up to date on all that as it does happen. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So 2 weeks ago, entering the draft, I gave you my top 10 power rankings for the NFL. In at 10th was the Ravens, 9th the Cowboys, 8th the Chargers, 7th the Jaguars, 6th the Jets, 5, the 49ers, 4, the Bills, 3, the Eagles, 2, the Bengals, and 1, the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to make one change to that after the draft, and I'm going to put the Eagles in second and the Bengals in third. I just absolutely loved what the Eagles did in this draft, taking all those Georgia players, starting off with Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith. The defense, they lost some pieces this offseason to kind of restock that defense in the first round and get those two players. And I think Nolan Smith could be an absolute stud. I was shocked that he fell to, I believe it was the 30th pick in the draft, because he only had 31 picks this year, not 32, because the Dolphins did lose their first round draft pick with the tampering going back to the Brady stuff. And you also get Jalen Carter, who was a top five talent, maybe even a top three talent in this draft. But because of the off the field problems, he did fall all the way to number 9. That's the one change that I did make there. Now, Pro Football Focus, they put out their own post-draft power rankings. And here's how they did go. Hickey, do you want me to give you these rankings? I'm only going to give you the top 10. Do you want me to go 1 to 10 or 10 to 1 with what PFF did? Because I only think there's one thing on this list, or actually two things on this list, that are absolutely egregious.
Let's go 1 to 10 then.
Okay. Number 1, the Kansas City Chiefs. 2, the Eagles. And they did move them up from 3 to 2 just like me after the draft. They have the Niners at 3. I think that's just a drop too high because of the Niners from a roster standpoint. And I know it's right all analytics with PFF. So we all know the Niners are going to grade out. The Niners, to me, have a great roster. My just biggest concern is their quarterback. Right now, we don't know if Brock Purdy's going to be ready for week one. I think it'd be a surprise at this point if he is. There's been nothing positive being said about Trey Lance. John Lynch, practically before the draft, was begging for teams to maybe go trade for him. And there's in a bizarre way, there keeps on being momentum building for Sam Darnold to actually be starting week one. So the Niners are a top five team. Personally, I'm not going to crush them because I had them as my fifth team, but I can't put them at three just because of the uncertainty at the quarterback position. Like, hey, they've been a top four team the last 2 years where they've been in the Final Four in back-to-back years with uncertainty at the quarterback position. But three in front of Cincinnati, that was a little egregious to me just because the Bengals have been to a Super Bowl and a championship game the last 2 years. But nothing like to freak out about. We'll keep the list moving. Bengals 4, Bills 5, the Jets at 6. They put the Cowboys at 7, the Chargers at 8. Here's the one that's a shocker to me. The Browns at 9. Now, I don't know when they last released their rankings, but all it says was their pre-draft rankings. And you try to explain this to me. It said the pre-draft rankings on the Browns. What do you think the number was? Out of 32 teams, you would think that it would be right in the top 15 if now you have them at 9, correct?
Yeah, I would guess 14 before you.
They had 21.
That. Jeez.
How do you move the Browns from 21 to 9 and Cleveland, they didn't have a pick to what, the third round because of the Watson deal? It's like, that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, the Browns' first pick was Cedric Tillman, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. 73rd overall. They did not have a pick. They did not make a selection until the 73rd pick in the draft. How is that enough to move up from PFF in their pre-draft ranking from 21 to 9? And all it says in the description, the Browns shored up their defense this offseason by adding safety one, Thornhill, and defensive tackle Dalvin Tomlinson. And they talked about one of their draft picks who posted a 76.4 pro football focused pass rushing grade and 11.6 pass rush win rate in 2022. And they also said Cleveland added to its receiving corps by drafting Tennessee wide receiver Cedric Tillman. Remember also the Browns this offseason, they traded for Elijah Moore as well. And last year they made a very good move in bringing in Amari Cooper for basically nothing. But that's inconceivable to me how they before the draft they were 21. Like if they had an Eagle-like draft, all right, you see the rise and it's understandable. But to go from 21 to 9 when you didn't pick until the third round, that makes no sense to me.
Well, I mean, even if you had an Eagles-like draft where everyone loves it,
it's a crazy jump.
It's also, the draft's a projection, so it does not mean that they're going to be starting day number one and be Pro Bowl-level players from year number one. So even if they had a great draft, there's still nothing that justifies going from 21 to 9 when not much has really changed.
And then in at 10, the Baltimore Ravens. There's a team missing. How are the Jaguars not in the top 10? The Jaguars have an easy-peasy division. The Jaguars have a Super Bowl-winning head coach. They have a quarterback that finally showed with good coaching that he's back to being that quarterback that everyone thought could be this great player and showing why he's deserving of the number one overall pick. How do you enter this year with the Jaguars who, as long as Trevor Lawrence stays healthy, they're going to easily win 10 games. Easily. With that division, with the Texans, you got the Colts. I don't think anyone really believes in Tennessee. How do you put the Browns in front of the Jaguars?
I don't know. I wish I had an answer for you. I mean,
you know what this is telling me? It tells me that PFF thinks the rust is really going to be knocked off of Deshaun Watson. But even then, you're in a brutal division. You may be in the best division in football. When you look at the Bengals, you got the Ravens. And I'm not telling you Cleveland's going to be awful. And you got Pittsburgh, who's got a good defense. And, you know, I kind of like the players that they brought in on the offensive side of the ball. That's from top to bottom, 1 through 4 in that division, that's a tough division. Like, the AFC East is tough. The AFC West, I don't really believe in Denver or the Raiders. Like, just look at the AFC. The South is by far and away the easiest division. And you're going to tell me that
not only are the Jaguars not top 10, but you're going to put the Browns and the Ravens in front of them? Like, if you want to tell me one of those teams, okay. You know, you could be a little bit different. You could make an argument. Like, I had the Ravens in at number 10 on my list. I had Jacksonville at 7. But to tell me that they're not in the top 10 and you put the Browns in front of them, that's one that just does not make sense to me. Where do you think the Jaguars ended up on this list?
I will say 12.
You're spot on. They were 12. Now, the Dolphins were 11. Giants, 13. Minnesota, 14. The Lions, 15. The Seahawks at 16. Which, by the way, not that I'm going to put them in my top 10, but I feel like the Seahawks should move up a few spots. I like what Seattle's doing. I know it's still tough to believe fully in Geno Smith, but Geno Smith played good football last year. The running back room is awesome and physical with Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet. Receiving-wise, you go get who I thought was the best wide receiver in the draft in Jaxon Smith-Njigba to already Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. You also, fifth overall, got Devin Witherspoon in a quarterback room that's already good with Woolen. It's like, I look at Seattle. Seattle could be the third best team in the NFC. I only think two teams, three teams probably belong in the top 10 because the Cowboys have these great regular seasons. I just don't believe in them in the postseason. But you could make a case that the Seahawks are the third best team in the NFC. Now, I put the Cowboys in at 9. But you look at the NFC teams you could consider to be the third best team in the NFC. Cowboys, definitely. It's without a doubt the Eagles are one, the Niners are two. But for the third best team in the NFC, you got a case for the Cowboys. Minnesota will be good in the regular season, but they might even be the best team in their division. It could be the Lions, even though I didn't love the Lions draft. And like outside of that, like Seattle could be just as good as Dallas. Seattle could be just as good as Minnesota, they can be just as good as the Lions, but it's probably right to give the Cowboys the edge just because of that defense with Micah Parsons and Diggs. It's just, I got questions about Dak Prescott putting it together. That's my biggest concern about the Cowboys, and yeah, I would, to be fair, give the edge to Dak over Geno Smith.
Well, that's the thing. You got questions about Dak, rightfully so. I also have questions about Geno Smith and his ability to replicate the really solid 2022 season that he had. And that's, I would say right now, it's definitely fair to doubt that aspect and putting the Seahawks lower than maybe you would think, or maybe that, you know, ends up being this year.
17, the Steelers, 18, the Packers, 19, the Bears. How about the Bears being at 19? Before the draft, they were 26. This is from PFF. Patriots, 20. Tampa Bay, 21. I think Tampa Bay is going to be brutal this year. Commanders, 22. I think that's low for the Commanders. Broncos, 23. Tennessee, 24. The Raiders, 25. Saints, 26. That's surprising, the Saints at 26. I think a lot of people believe the Saints are going to go win the NFC South this year. And I don't think that's a lock like everyone else, but if you made me pick today, I would pick the Saints to win the NFC South because I'm not really in love with any of the other teams. You know, I don't know what to expect year one out of Stroud and Young. I'm confusing them with the AFC South. But you look at the NFC South, with Bryce Young in there with the Panthers. You know, Tampa, I don't think Tampa's going to be all that good.
Baker, you're not believing in Baker?
No.
Come on.
Why would I believe in Baker Mayfield?
Because you're the Raiders.
You're the only soul on the planet that still believes in Baker Mayfield.
That's right.
Like, Atlanta, they got talented players. I can't trust Desmond Ridder, so I got to give the benefit of the doubt right now to the Saints, even though you kind of hold your nose on that division just because of Derek Carr being their quarterback, who's a fine quarterback who isn't great. But it's like, you look at the Saints, they're at 26. That doesn't make sense to me. Falcons at 27, Panthers at 28, Colts, 29, Rams 30, Texans 31, and then the Cardinals in at 32. This is a very funky list. Like, in the top 10, the only thing I crush them for is putting the Browns at 9 and having the Jaguars out of the top 10. But, like, once you kind of get past like once you get to 18 or 19, that's where it starts to raise some eyebrows, especially when you have the Bears as 19.
I mean, it is PFF. They don't really don't use a lot of logic.
Well, PFF I think is good, but then I always say you got to take it with a grain of salt. Because there's sometimes I'll look at their list, I'll be like, oh, that's a really good list. And there'll be other times where it's like, I just saw that player play, he was great, and they're trying to tell me that he was not as good as what they made it out to be. But really, the one that I still can't believe is how before the draft started, you didn't even have the Cleveland Browns in, what, the top 20? And I'm at 21. And now they're the ninth best team in football, and they didn't have a draft pick until the third round? So, and once again, here's my top 10. Chiefs, Eagles, Bengals, Bills, Niners, Jets, Jaguars, Chargers, Cowboys, and Ravens. And I remember when we did this last time, you said you thought the Dolphins should be in the top 10, right? Was there anyone else that you thought should be in the top 10 too? Outside of those 10 that I just gave you?
There was another team I'm blanking at, but I
was
know
it the
Dolphins.
Lions?
The Lions, yes. Thank you, the Lions.
Okay. We'll see about the Lions. You know what? The Lions, I'm wondering what you're going to get out of Goff this year. Like, Goff had a really good year last year. I just wonder if you're going to be able to see that again from Goff. And Jahmyr Gibbs, he could be, like, I think Gibbs will be a good running back in this league, but I didn't like that draft pick. Now DeAndre Swift's out of there. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown's very talented. Jameson Williams is going to be out for the first six games of the season with the suspension. I just look at that team. I think they're good. I think they're solid. But I would not be making the case for them right now to be a top 10 team in the NFL. Like I do like the Seahawks roster better than the Lions, just for starters, in the NFC. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back with the news break.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, news brief time. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Lonnie Walker. Yeah, that's right. He was your hero last night in game four, as you do see the Lakers take a 3-1 series lead. Lonnie Walker is very happy that all of his hard work paid off when he had 15 points in the fourth quarter to get the Lakers that 3-1 lead.
Honestly, you know, I've been shooting a lot of shots my entire life. So, you know, I got a lot of confidence in myself. I know my value. You know, I know what I'm capable of doing. And, you know, by the grace of God and a lot of hard work and sacrifices and time, you know, in the gym.
Lonnie Walker says it was a dream come true to have a performance like this in the playoffs.
The greatest feeling you can ever imagine. You know, as a kid, this is something I've been dreaming of doing, not just being a part of the playoffs, but impacting it, yet alone winning the playoffs. And, you know, I'm truly proud of myself. You know, it really shows my capabilities and just my mental fortitude.
It was kind of crazy last night, Hickey, where just the night prior you saw Landry Shamet go off in the fourth, and then basically Lonnie Walker was just playing the role of Landry Shamet for the Los Angeles Lakers. To see that on back-to-back nights, when you have all these stars, right, with the Suns, when you have Kevin Durant and you also have Devin Booker. For the Lakers, you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. For the two biggest talking points in the last two games, you know, when you look at the Suns up against the Nuggets in game four and the Lakers up against the Warriors in game four, and then you also see the stars on Denver, and you also see the stars on the Warriors. To have Landry Shamet and Lonnie Walker dominate the headlines and make the big shots late and make the big plays in the final 12 minutes, that's really something.
And not to be all cliche here, but like that's truly why, like, especially in the playoffs, it's a team sport. The Lakers do not win game four if it's not for Lonnie Walker. I don't think I'd ever dream of saying that phrase on the radio, but that's the truth. With a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, they do not win game four and probably end the Warriors dynasty without Lonnie Walker the fourth.
Well, I don't know if their dynasty is now over. I think that's a little bit too in the moment, because last year it's not like the Warriors
really, when you watched them, they were so great. Their good brand of basketball was still good enough to go win a championship. Like, you got to figure out what the heck's going on with Jordan Poole moving forward, and there's some questions still to be answered. But it's not like right now there's a team in the East or the West where I'm saying, oh, it's then inconceivable for the Warriors next year to get hot, make their shots, and then go on a run back to the finals next year. I'm not saying this dynasty's over yet. I think that's a little premature.
I think we're going to see a lot of offseason moves. A lot.
Okay, like who?
Well, they're $120 million over the cap next year. Who's staying? How did they bring back the team?
But you
Draymond Green has a player option.
You agree trade Steph's Clay? Still going to be there, and you would agree that Clay's still going to be there, right?
I don't know about Clay. I think everyone but Steph is up on the table at this point.
Okay, so as long as you have Steph, and if you make the right moves as well, and I